explore the depths of holistic health, uncovering the interconnectedness of our emotions, mind, body, and spirit. This podcast is dedicated to individuals who are on a quest to uncover their truth, understanding their genetic and spiritual DNA, and learning how to harness this knowledge to achieve optimal health. But this isn't just another health podcast. Natural Podcast is here to ignite a spark of hope within you, reminding you of your innate potential for greatness. You are pure love, capable of living life to its fullest expression. Are you ready to embark on a transformational journey to achieve optimal health? All right, in today's episode, we have Dr. Moshe Daniel Block, who is a naturopathic doctor, author and innovator in holistic health. A graduate of the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine, he developed the VIS Dialogue, a counseling method uniting mind, body, medicine, and psychology. His books include Holistic Counseling, Introducing the VIS Dialogue, and Letting Go of Free Will, where they explore the intersection of healing, physiology, and emotional well-being. Having personally overcome myasthenia gravis using naturopathic principle, Dr. Moshe now trains practitioners worldwide in his transformation approaches to health and personal growth. Some interesting facts about Dr. Moshe is that he loves billiards. He also enjoys electroculture, which is growing with alchemy, where he meets agriculture, and he used to play the ultimate frisbee and golf. Welcome to the Natural Health Podcast. I know before we jumped on here, we spoke a little bit about frisbee and golf, and I asked if you do frisbee golf, because there is such a thing and not a lot of people know about it, but you used to play ultimate frisbee and golf separately.
Yes, that's right. I played them separately and also play frisbee golf a little bit. More fun, more just for fun. I'm not very good at that, but it is a lot of fun, that sport.
Yeah, I actually bought a pack because there's a field near me, the frisbee golf, and I haven't gone yet. I've got the frisbee. I've got the course. I just have to make my way there, because one day I just saw him playing. I'm like, that looks like a lot of fun. I jumped online, bought myself those frisbees, and I was like, I got to give this a go.
Good for you. It's a great sport. I love getting out on the course and Lenny or Rip, trying to get the disc in the basket. That is a lot of fun. I love it.
Yeah. It will also be probably pretty annoying, because the basket isn't that big when you actually think about it. I don't know if people that are listening know about it, but baskets aren't that big. They're pretty small, aren't they? So
yeah,
you got a position.
I mean, if you compare it to like a regular golf, you know, the teeny little cup, much bigger. But when you throw it, you could end up hitting the chains and it not going in the basket itself, which is a little frustrating, I find.
Yeah, amazing. Tell me a little bit about, I got so interested when you said that you do a bit of alchemy, meeting agriculture. What is that about?
Ooh, well, so there's a technology that's been around for quite a while. It was quite much more prevalent in France. It's called electroculture. And it's using different principles. It definitely intersects with alchemy. Like, for example, tapping into we could look at it from a scientific perspective, and it's not very alchemical at all, but there is an intersection there where you tap into the positive potential of the sky and the negative earth potential. And by drawing, energy from the sky and channeling it into your garden beds with electric wires and magnets, we could really boost agricultural positive output and get bumper crops. The flow of ions, because like basically there's many different forms of electroculture. So one of them is using an antenna, where the antenna is basically channeling a lot of the ions from the ionosphere. Well, not that high, but from the atmosphere. And it causes a flow, a very slow trickle of current through a wire in the garden beds. And that attracts water and nutrients and healthy fungi and bacteria. And it causes a thriving environment for plant growth. It's really neat.
That sounds magical. That sounds absolutely brilliant. And I love gardening. I've got a little garden myself and a farmer go to assist. So yeah, and I know that they've had someone come out and put copper throughout the farms to assist them with their growth too.
That's right. That's electroculture. Like, putting coils around the plants. You could really boost the growth just by having a coil around a plant. There's also something called the Tower of Power, where if the higher you build up using a basalt as a material, basalt is stone. It's like it's everywhere in the bedrock around the earth. So it's very readily available, but it's paramagnetic, which is different from most plants and trees and everything are diamagnetic. So they are receiving, to compare and contrast, we could call that, let's say, the feminine aspect of the magnetic field of the earth. This is according to Philip S. Callahan, who basically developed this idea of using basalt to channel the positive aspect of the magnetism. That's using his terms, because basalt is very paramagnetic. And you'll see trees growing on a big chunk rock in the middle of the forest with no soil. The roots are all exposed, and the roots are just on this big chunk of basalt, because the paramagnetic material is bringing in incredible energetic fertilizer for the plants, and it's really remarkable.
Yeah, wow, that's just magical. And what were you saying about the higher you built the tower? Has that got to do with the energy coming in more precise? More is it kind of like giving it a point to go to, or how does that work?
You know what? It's a really good question. I don't know how it works. It could be similar to the principle of the higher the antenna you use, the higher you're tapping into the positive potential of the sky. It might have something to do with that. I know that the formula is for every foot that you build your tower of power above the ground, you have a 20-foot radius effect. So I have a 7-foot tall tower of power. It means anything within 140 feet of that tower of power is going to be getting this benefit. And you can see it with the gardens. Although, I haven't been too scientific because I've seen so much evidence. I don't feel like I need to prove that to myself. So I just did as I liked, and I did see great results. So is it because of the antenna or the magnets, or is it because of the orientation with the north? And then, or is it the tower of power? I don't know. It's all, for me, it's all of it. And I think it's a really cool and worthy endeavor to, create an experiment where you could compare and contrast different, you have your electroculture and then you don't. But like I said, I saw so much evidence for that online. You watch videos for it, and I was convinced. So I just went ahead and I built a bunch of stuff all at the same time. And I've had really good results with it.
He'll like, let's just try it all and see what happens.
Let's just throw it all in there. Let's exactly. That's me. That's
Long
me.
as the end result is amazing, the rest is, we don't have to pinpoint as to what exactly it was that assisted. Something did, and I'm loving the end result.
Exactly.
No, that's amazing. Tell us a little bit about, what got you to where you are now. You're a naturopathic doctor, you're an author, absolutely amazing human.
Oh,
So what got
thank you.
you into where you are today and now, and your passion for everything that you do?
That's a great question. I think there's two answers to that. One is like a very, a more obvious answer, and that is that I was a very sick kid. I was always sick, and I was always getting injured. And I mean a lot. Like, and it was heartbreaking because I would have like this really good, team, and I'd be doing really well and excelling at hockey and soccer and baseball. I played a lot of sports, hockey the most seriously. And then I'd get injured or I'd be sick and I'd be sidelined, and I didn't like it. It sort of brought about some suffering for me. And then, as I grew up, I continued to have different kinds of challenging illnesses. The most serious was what you named in the bio, which is myasthenia gravis. It's a rare autoimmune disease where the cells of the immune system attack the connection between the nerves and the muscles. And so there's no communication between the nerves from the brain and the muscles, so there's paralysis. And when I was diagnosed with it, I was told that it was progressive, incurable, and potentially fatal. So that the math, I didn't like the
It's not
math on
something
that.
you want to hear, right?
No. It's not like I was in denial, like, oh no, that can't happen. It was like, no, I don't believe that. It was like I didn't resonate with it. I didn't believe it. So I did look into a lot of things. I did a lot of the suggested, protocols and like formula and like cutting edge technologies, and nothing really touched it until I had a deep dialogue exploring my belief systems at what's in Massachusetts, it's called the Options Institute. And I had a revelation that I had a false belief that I needed to be perfect. And I never considered that. I was just like, took it for granted, well, I need to be perfect. And it was a subconscious pattern. So when the question was asked to me, because, going deeper and deeper into the subconscious, it brought out this statement, because I need to be perfect. And then the practitioner then asked me, what makes you feel or believe you need to be perfect? And that was the life-changing question, where I realized in the question that it didn't need to be. And I had a spontaneous healing on the spot. My eyes open up because I was having droopy eyelids and myasthenia gravis, double vision. I couldn't breathe very well. I had paralysis in my arms and I could barely lift my legs up. And I was within 3 to 5 minutes, the chi returned into my body and I was well. Because, wow. And this is what got me into the healing. So before that, what got me into the healing was like, I don't like suffering from illness. I want to figure out how to help people. I wanted to help people. That was the motivation. And then I really wanted to help people understand the power of the mind to create illness and subsequently heal illness. An Israeli healer. His name is Cohen. I forget his name now. But you could look him up. He has a book titled The Mind is the Healer, The Mind is the Killer. Or The Mind is the Killer, The Mind is the Healer. And that's basically it. So I believed that I needed to be perfect. And I would punish myself severely, emotionally, by turning against myself and going like internal, like stupid. If I deemed that I was not perfect. So when I was beating myself up, what I realized by the immune cells stopping attacking myself, when I stopped attacking myself, they stopped attacking myself. They were just doing what I was doing in my mind. They're just being faithful servants to the mind. And in healthcare, people generally don't realize the power of this mind-body connection, where what the mind is choosing, which is out of alignment with the person's true nature, right? Then the body will reflect that in some way with rigidity or weakness or inflammation or headaches or constipation. I mean, I could go on and on. The mind and body are one, with the body being the faithful puppy dog or the faithful servant to the mind. So this is what really inspired me to want to go into this field of naturopathic medicine, also because I really liked science and I also liked healing. So I wanted this balance of, like, let's say, for lack of a better word, East meets West, or traditional root, earth medicine and science. So that's why I chose naturopathic medicine.
Yeah, I love how you explained your journey and how you went into the vulnerability part of being like, I got myself some healing and it came out that I want to be perfect. And I think a lot of individuals can relate to that because we all have a loving nature within us. We all want to be good. We all want to do good. And therefore we put such high standards on ourselves, and we want to, and we try to reflect that to the world. And when we don't, we give ourselves that, like you said, that little, bashing. And it's interesting that you reflected that back into, the disease, illness that you had. It was doing exactly what you were doing to yourself. And, you know, we sometimes get so angry and upset at our bodies for not giving us what they should be giving us, especially if you're saying, you know, you're an athlete and you should be able to perform like a robot every single match. You should be at 100%. But if right. you're not loving yourself and giving yourself that what it needs, your body's not going to. And that's exactly what happened to you with what you went through.
Exactly. Exactly. There's a quote in A Course in Miracles. Are you familiar with that book? You ever hear?
I have that book on my bedside table.
Oh, good for you. Yeah, it's great. My buddy Alex is presently reading it again. So he's like sharing quotes. And it's re-inspiring me. I have a quote in my program where I teach what I do, holistic counseling. And it's only the mind is capable of error. The body can act wrongly only when it is responding to misthought. And that's been my experience. Like, there are some exceptions to that. But generally speaking, high 90s percentile, when there's chronic illness, the body is simply responding to misthought. The person is misinterpreting their reality, or as a child, they develop something to help them survive the world because they didn't understand how their parents could be so A to Z, unloving, neglectful, you know, impatient, absent. And so the child will develop the belief system to hold on to justify the pain that they go through for not being loved adequately, you know, as we all deserve to be loved by our parents. But their parents were wounded and their parents were wounded. So, yeah, so this is basically what we see in these beliefs that we hold on to. They're false, but we believe we need them for many different reasons. Everybody's different, right? This is a principle of naturopathic medicine, you know, treat the individual. So I specialize in myasthenia gravis, and I've seen hundreds and hundreds of cases in my 25 years of practice, but no one case has been the same.
Yeah, not isn't that interesting? Case. But yeah, the diagnosis yeah. is the same, right?
The illness is diagnosed the same, but the manifestation of symptoms are completely different. How the person got there is different. How they get healed is different. It's very individual. And when I say how they get healed, for me, I had a very powerful spontaneous healing. And that was basically it. And I was like good for a long time. I did have another bout with it, and it was another trigger, which we could talk about, but I want to also explain that some people it's a war of attrition. It's a battle with their wound and their ego and their attachment to their false beliefs that could last years. It's, and you know, maybe even a lifetime because of how entrenched those beliefs are and the accompanying emotion that comes from the wounds and the beliefs. So it could be really, really an intense process that requires dedication. And sometimes when people realize that level of the path of, you know, you have the power to heal when you understand what you're choosing to believe, which is false, right? That's basically in a nutshell.
That's huge to come to that part. Like what you just said, you just said in within seconds, but to come to that conclusion doesn't happen. Well, can happen in seconds, but it's a huge thing to do.
It's a huge thing to do. And our culture, and especially our medicines have been designed with that completely not in focus. The idea, you know, the doctor, you know, you go to the doctor and the doctor tells you what's wrong with you and tells you what to do. And there's very little involvement in conventional medicine. And then there's a little bit, you know, that gets a little bit better. But even like in my profession, naturopathic medicine, there's not a lot of doctors working in the level of the mind. A lot of doctors choose material means to address the body and even the mind, like even depression, they'll give like, you know, substances that have anxiolytic effects or that affect GABA or, you know, like 5-HTP for whatever, serotonin levels. And it's still playing with the boulders in the body. You know, we're tossing around boulders. And the when we go from the physical to the vital to the emotional, and the emotional to the mental, each of those steps is a quantum level more powerful at affecting change in the physical body. The physical approach is the least effective. It has the most side effects. It has the most possible harmful interactions with other substances we could be taking. It's the most expensive. It just has it has all the X's, you know? And then as we go into subtler and subtler medicine, we have more and more power to activate the healing in the person. And Mihaela, what I love about the mind, the going at the mind level, is that what I've come to understand, as much as I have been able to until this time, is that when a person gets a chronic illness, that is a message to them that something's off. So the illness, just as you said, is a message. It's showing them, hey, and it also pushes people to look within. Unless you go some path where you don't feel like you need to do that, right? You just get rid of the symptoms, which is not a good long-term strategy. But here, when we're on this path and we get this illness, it's an opportunity for spiritual evolution, for growth, for evolution of the soul. Because if we get an illness, that is where we are stuck in our evolution at that time in our lives.
Isn't it interesting that we have to so-called suffer physically to get spiritual evolution?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we don't have to, but some of us have to. This guy over here. Like you can get spiritual evolution by falling in love and letting go. And meditating deeply and like smelling the roses and, you know, swimming in the ocean. There's so many ways of letting go and letting God. I, for instance, had a very intact ego and a very strong sense of confidence in myself, which was, you know, it's nice to have confidence, but it was misplaced in a way. You know, that's a half truth, because the confidence was good. And it was also not aware of so many things that I didn't know. Like, I didn't know so much. And I think that if I had continued on that trajectory of like, yeah, I got this thing called life, I wouldn't have learned so many of the things. Like, by almost dying, it's like a really good wake-up call. And so that's what I needed, you know? And I think when people get sick, that's exactly what nature is showing them that they need to look at. They actually need to look at. It's a sign. It's a sign.
Yeah, 100%. And when you take it as a sign, and when you, I guess, react to it the way that you have, instead of, you know, that ego coming in place and being angry and being like, why is this happening to me? Why is my body letting me down? Why is my mind failing me? And just saying all these things to yourself, I guess that in itself kind of gives the disease, illness, whatever you want to name it, even more power, and it just grows right. And grows and grows, instead of taking accountability, reflecting, being like, okay, so why is this happening? Thank you so much for this happening, because now I'm reflecting and I'm able to sit back. I'm able to step outside of myself, outside of my ego, meditate, or go into the ocean, talk to a colleague, talk to a therapist, whoever it is, and understand why this is happening. And then reflecting on it and being like, wow, I would have never sat down and asked myself these questions if this didn't happen.
Exactly. And that added level that you're talking about, it's like adding fuel to a fire. So the person is...
But you can understand they're frustrated.
Yeah, of course. Right? Of course.
Because there's so many listeners that are listening and they're just going through something and they're just like, I'm over it, Mihaela. I don't want to deal with it. I just want to feel better.
100%. And I hear that a lot in my practice. You know, get rid of, I want you to get rid of this illness, get rid of it.
Yes.
And then I'm like, I don't work that way. But, and I explain it and they're like, okay, because there's a level of trust, I think that I've had the advantage of having been sick with this illness that is incurable, progressive, and potentially fatal. And my story inspires people to go the distance, because sometimes, you know, working this way has challenges and has doubts and has ups and downs. But then they have this sort of like boost of confidence. So then they get to that point where then I'm hearing from them, "Doctor, I've learned so much from this illness." And I even, not that I like it, that I want it to stay, but I have like a fondness about it.
Yeah, wow.
That's cool. To go from that, get rid of it, I'm so frustrated with it, to this feeling of gratitude. And that the gratitude comes from what it gives the person. The frustration is the ego's being thwarted by the symptoms. So the symptoms are actually a manifestation, like one of the insides into the rabbit hole, understanding what this illness is about for a person, is seeing what it's preventing them to do, or what it bothers, how it bothers them in their life. I can't go out drinking with friends, or I can't sit around the table and eat, you know, what everybody else is eating. I feel very isolated from that. That's an indication of what the cause is of the illness in the first place. So when the ego is getting all riled up about it, the cause of the illness is at play in their frustration because of the symptoms, right? It's quite amazing how that works. So yeah, I really love this way of looking at chronic illness. And I say chronic. We could do this work with acute, but acute is a little bit different, because sometimes, you know, you're just sick and you'll be fine in a couple of days. Nothing we need to intervene. Just rest, drink a lot of water, get good, you know, good sleep, and you'll detox good. But when it becomes chronic, it's not going away. That's a sign that there's a hook or a block, and that comes from the mental emotional field.
Yeah.
Because our body's designed to recover, to get better. And if it's not, there's a block there, and that block is karmic, and it has to do with the belief systems and where we're stuck in our evolution.
You just said so many keywords there. I just want to dig into so many of them. But it's interesting that you said that, you know, we're stuck in our evolution because of it. And I guess, you know, you even said with your what you've been battling with, you had a flare, right? And that's what they're called, like when things come back up. And I guess it's interesting because, you know, some people go through healing and they're like, oh, okay, done and dusted. Awesome. That's so good. I've dealt with that belief. I'm putting that over there. I've so-called evolved away from that. But then years come past and something might just go bam and it triggers it. And therefore it may trigger that physical response too. And it's like, I think for us to understand is that it's not linear. This healing or this evolution is not linear. We are going to have ups and downs. And I feel like us as humans, we struggle with that.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally. You know, like, so a person can be doing well and then the original, like they're doing well with the choices that they made that are false. Because a belief system and a choice sort of go hand in hand. So they get a handle on it, but then they forget, or they do something that's really not good for them. Like they get really drunk, or they do drugs, or they have a bad breakup, and then they go back into the pattern and they do the same thing. They don't realize it's back in the subconscious. So the same cause is a revisitation, and then they could just retrace their footsteps and to recover again. What happened to me was 10 years ago, it was a new trigger. It was a deeper quantum level for me to look at my soul's evolution. It brought up something else. It wasn't any more about like, oh, I need to be perfect. I'm not perfect. Ah, stupid, stupid, stupid. It wasn't that anymore. It was a deep issue around, you know, becoming a father. And I was quite attached and to the idea of becoming enlightened. And I thought mistakenly, I mean, very mistakenly, that I believed that, you know, my opportunity at the most important thing in my life was over. And ergo, I felt my life was over. And then, well, my body started to actually do that. It started to shut down, and I almost died that time. I came very close. So it was deeper. It was darker. It was uglier. It was harder to recover, and it was amazing. I actually learned a lot from, you know, round two. I learned a lot from round one, and I learned a lot from round two. So for me, it was like another thing. And, you know, body took on these symptoms. The symptoms were a little different, actually, that time, because they were more heavy duty. And, you know, there's also this principle. There's a Hebrew expression, Israeli expression. I think it's Israeli. I don't know. It's Hebrew expression, whatever. It's Rofe Tov Holech LeGeinom, which means a good doctor goes through hell. And, you know, when I was a younger person, I never understood how people got depressed. Like, I was like, just change your mind, you know, get over it already, you know. No compassion, no understanding, until I got really depressed, and then I understood how that could happen and how it's really hard to get out. And you can't just change your mind. I mean, you can, but accessing that is challenging, right, in many cases. And then with myasthenia gravis, the first time I got sick, I changed my belief system and I recovered like that. And so I was like, a little bit in my practice, this expectation, well, just change your belief system and then you'll get there. And that's also true, just like the thing with depression, but at how much access do we have? How deep is it? Because when I got sick the second time, I was so sick. I couldn't even operate my mind. I was so sick. Wow, I needed like some heroic measures to just get me, you know, like a turtle, like just give me a kick in the butt so I could take one step on my own. That's how sick I was. So it was very interesting. Another dynamic of lessons there, you know, and healing.
And by being a naturopathic doctor and being sick or feeling sick, sometimes you just get so frustrated and feel so hopeless. But like you said, that Hebrew expression, that, you know, the good doctor goes through hell, and they go through things like that to become, I guess, so-called a good doctor and be able to help heal. And like you said, have a bit more compassion. You were able to be more compassion to the clients, to individuals when they're going through something. And I love that you're so vulnerable enough to share your story about becoming a father, because, you know, that in itself is huge, because, you know, it's even becoming a mother, becoming a father, you know, for some people, you know, like for kids, it's huge. You wouldn't even reflect on becoming a sister or a brother, like all of these changes. And I remember I had an amazing guest on the podcast and they spoke about grief. All of this is grief. So you're grieving the old version of you, of not being a dad, and now you're becoming a dad. Which is, it's kind of like, it's grief, but it's excitement. And you're kind of like battling your head and you're like, am I excited? Am I not? What's happening? And then you just, yeah. And for you, it triggered an old illness.
Yeah. Yeah. I can remember the moment when I felt I incepted myself with the thought that my life is over. I felt despair at the deepest core. Like I could reach into my chest, and it was like hundreds of feet deep down there. And it went all the way down and it went like despair, my life's over. And then my health declined rapidly after that. All my organs were shutting down and I really incepted myself. And I use that word from the movie Inception. You know, when they go into the person's dreams and they plant thoughts. Well, I planted a thought consciously that went really subconsciously. Mm. And since then, I've learned so much about it. Like there was something that I was carrying from another time around being a parent that I had to resolve. And I had resigned myself to never, ever be a parent again. Like lifetime after lifetime after never going there again. So this endeavor of doing the thing, I mean, it's been so like wonderful, so beyond wonderful. And it's so not what I believed it would be. And, you know, I can laugh about this now. I really can, because it's such a silly thought. Yeah, it's such a privilege. It's such a divine gift to have these munchkins, these
Yeah.
adorable creatures
But I think
at
he
my
also shows
fingertips.
the evolution in your beliefs, and that we're not so we don't have to be so headstrong on certain beliefs. Yes, some values and beliefs we want to uphold, and we are, we want to push them forward and be them. But at the same time, the more flexible we are, the healthier we are.
Yeah, that's very well said. And I think that we also have to accept that, we want, like consciously, our egos want something. Like there's a lot of things we want, but we don't always get what we want. The Rolling Stones, you can't always get what you want, but if you try, sometimes you get what you need. We do get what we need, although we don't always like it because it does challenge where we're attached in our ego. So I think just harnessing an attitude of accepting that we're not always going to get what we want, especially with illness. Well, not even just illness, just like hopes and dreams, maybe, Some people are in lifetimes where they get a lot. Like they're reaping what they sowed, and congratulations. That's great.
Well done.
Well done. Well done.
Good
Enjoy,
on you. Enjoy.
Good on you. Enjoy the pickings.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's just like, okay, I know that's what you want, but this here's what you get. And so,
Yeah.
because ultimately we're not in control. We're not in control. We think we're in control, or we want to be in control, but we're not.
Yeah.
There are some things we can control, but ultimately, like an enlightened master is in a place where they have total surrender. There's no control there. That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I was telling you how I used to desire, like I used to really want to be enlightened. Like my whole life was about that. Alchemy for enlightenment, meditation, Kriya Yoga, everything that I did was like for enlightenment. And then when I realized what enlightenment is, as much as I am able to understand it, I wrote an article that the title was "I Used to Want to Be Enlightened," because it's an absurdity of the ego to want enlightenment, because the ego has to die, like it has to completely surrender itself in the process. So if let's say you desired a cake, you're baking this cake, right? And you want nothing but the cake. And then you realize at the very end, like, oh, I don't get to eat the cake. I don't get to eat the cake. I mean, we could say, I don't want to get too philosophical because I don't even know if this really me if this really adds up. But ultimately, you go to bite the cake and you don't get to have the cake. You already have it in your stomach. It's like it's already digested. It's already a part of you, right? There's no cake to be eaten.
Yeah,
That's a
wow.
cool part. Yeah.
No, I love that. I love that how you've put that into the story. And my mind's just going everywhere. And then it's just like, yeah, there's so much to that. There is so much to that. We could go on for hours because it's like, yeah, why did we even make the cake at the first place? Like, is other people making cakes? Are other people eating cakes? Can they taste the cake? Can they smell the cake? Do we even need to smell it? Do we need to eat it? Like, there's so much there. Like, oh my gosh.
Absolutely.
Now you're
Is
making me
there
want cake, you
actually
know?
cake?
I
What's that?
said, now I want cake.
I love cake. And I like cookies too. That's really cool. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
It's mind-blowing. But tell me, whilst you were talking, I was thinking about your book and the title. And tell us a little bit about the book that you wrote, Holistic Counseling.
Yeah.
And is it the vis? Is that what you say it? Vis
Yeah, you
dialogue?
pronounce it perfectly. It's Latin. Vis means power, and it
Yeah.
comes from, I derived it from one of the tenets of naturopathic medicine, vis medicatrix naturae, which means the healing power of nature. So it's the healing power of nature dialogue. It's the vis dialogue is where psychology meets mind body medicine. So mind-body medicine, i.e. the body, the mind is thinking something, the body is reflecting that. And, you know, psychology, but really what the process is of the Beast Dialogue is ask. I have an Alaska shirt on, and I just realized because I was working with a patient, and I had this thing, and it said ask. And I was like, how funny is that? Perfect. You know, it's like ask. Because what we do in the Beast Dialogue is we ask.
Okay.
Where like basically the tagline of the Beast Dialogue is where questions heal. So by asking questions, we don't offer advice. We don't give archetypal explanations for why people are going through what they are. There's no expert opinion.
Mm-hmm.
There is asking. And so the patient, the client, gets to reflect deeper and deeper and see with their conscious mind, almost like they're brought into a kind of a hypnotherapeutic trance, but they're conscious. And they're contacting an awareness of what they're believing in their subconscious, which was out of their conscious reach. So just by asking and going deeper and deeper, we can reveal what's going on inside the patient's subconscious, and it gives them the opportunity to make changes when they're at that level. Like the analogy there is like, oh, you're depressed? Well, just change your mind. Just think happy thoughts. No. But if you get down to the root cause of depression and the person realizes they believe they're not good enough and they keep seeing that everywhere and they feel very depressed about that, well, then if you bring them down to realize that the belief that they're not good enough is actually a choice. It started somewhere. It started and there's a reason why they're choosing. Then you could say, change that thought. Right? When you're down at the where the ship is moored to the dock and you see the rope, you can say, okay, untie that. But you can't say, it's like, all right, come on, let's sail out to sea. Let's go. No more depression. But you don't even realize the ship is tied, moored to the dock, right? So that's what the Beast Dialogue, ask and you shall receive an understanding of ourself deeper. And reveal the choice that is involved and then change the mentality, change the mindset.
I like that you said questions heal. I guess it allows us to reflect and understand, what's tying us down? What's that little thing that's tied the not so tight? It's not the fact that we are tied up. It's like what initially got that started. And I guess by asking questions, you can kind of reflect and understand yourself a little bit better. Because sometimes when people ask you things, you're like, well, I've never asked myself that. I wonder what that looks like or feels like or where that came from.
Exactly. Exactly. When a person says to me during a dialogue, good question, I realize they've never reflected about that before. Just like I never reflected on the question, what makes you believe you need to be perfect? I don't know. I never even thought about that before. So it's taking a person's hand and walking them into the deep part of themselves that they used to, at some point, do consciously most of the time. And then the conscious thing became in the background. And then they forgot that they were doing that. That to me is like a simple explanation for the subconscious. It's like used to be conscious. But then it got buried by layers. So then it's going on in the background and they're hearing it all the time. It's like if you have a buzz in your room and you're not focused on it, you just sort of, you put it to the background. It doesn't even occupy your thought. But then when you focus on it, you're like, oh my gosh, that buzz is driving me crazy. That's like with what our beliefs are doing in the subconscious mind and the emotional field that's a passive reflection of that. You know, if I believe I'm not good enough, well, I feel not good enough. And that feeling is actually where we get stuck because the feeling is like a sponge and it absorbs all kinds of stuff. So we really have to get in there and undo all the attachments in order for the belief to be able to go. We have to move the emotion to let the belief go. for the most part.
That emotion. And I feel like, you know, with everything that you said today, when that emotion's not moving, that's when it kind of manifests and just gets rigid, and that's when you become rigid. And that's why I always say flexibility is health. So the more we move the emotions, the more we move things, the more we physically move ourselves, as we know, also movement helps us heal, helps move emotions. I think the healthier we get. But I love the aspect of asking questions. And you said, you know, you have clients in front of you and they, you just see them spark and go, "Ooh, I've never actually thought about that." And plus, maybe they've been asked these questions, but they've never been provided a safe space to express themselves authentically and vulnerably enough to dig deeper into that. Because if that attachment, that, you know, that knot is so tight, they may have never felt safe to potentially look at it or undo it.
Yeah. Or they didn't know how.
Yeah.
Also, what I provide in the Vise dialogue is, like, I'm a stickler for keeping a person on track.
Yeah.
Like, we like to squirrel out of those places that are painful. So I hold that space pretty, very firmly, you know, with compassion and love and everything, but I don't let people squirrel out of there. As soon as they squirrel out of there, okay, come on back. We don't need the story. We don't need, you know, because it's avoidance pattern. So by having a concentrated effort and somebody there really keeping you on track, you can go pretty deep, pretty quick. Like, you can get to resolve the core issue in one session.
That's pretty big. That's pretty big to say that. Like, that's pretty big.
And it happens all the time.
Because there's people that have spent thousands of dollars on cognitive behavioral therapies, and I sit down with them and they're like, "I've seen my counselor for the last 15 years, you know, and you're saying one session you might be able to get to the bottom of the belief and be able to change it." That's huge.
Yeah, it's huge. And it happens all the time. And we've had, and I say we, I mean myself and the people I've trained. So it is conveyable how I'm able to train and convey what I'm doing. We've heard all the time, one session of the Vise dialogue could be like 10 to 20 years in regular therapy. It's because there's a certain factors that are in place. I want to give us a little bit of a caveat. When we get to the core and you understand the core, it could completely release and you could be done with it. The person could be done with it. That's more rare than getting to the core, understanding it, but then, you know, and even releasing, you're even having some spontaneous healing, but then it could come back because there's other factors. And, you know, when push comes to shove and you're with your family and they're like holding you to this pattern, and like, so then the person could be back and forth with it. So that happens as well. There's anything along that spectrum from one session to many years, you know. But really, I think one of the things that makes the Vise dialogue so effective is that it's based on a principle, which I don't think is shared by too many other forms of mind-body therapy or psychotherapy or counseling. And the principle is a universal principle, which is shared in yoga and Taoism. And even if you look deeply into mystical Christianity and Judaism and stuff like that, you'll see that who we really are, and this is the principle that it's based on, is the I am. It is the consciousness of the divine creator. And so there's a principle there of unconditional okayness. Not the best in the world. I'm not like the master of creation. I'm just okay as I am. Peaceful about it still. So because that's the backdrop, it becomes easier to navigate the mind field that the mind is by looking for conditionalities that the person has. Basically, I need that thing to be happy, right? And that could be attention. It could be, I need to have my voice heard. I need to feel respected. I need to be have a lot of money. I need my body to look a certain way in order to be good enough. Like, whatever the thing is that we believe you know, we're casting our, and we're trying to like reel it in to bring happiness to us and okayness. That's the trap. That attachment to that external thing is the seed around which illness forms.
Yeah, that's mind-blowing. I don't know, my mind's getting blown. I can just imagine listeners being like, wow, what is my little attachment? Yeah, because a lot of people...
My little condition.
Yeah.
I will only feel happy if, you know... If
but it could even be something like so-called healthy in a way. I will only be kind of like happy if I'm evolved, if I am spiritually closer to the source, and then I'm a good person.
That's such a profound statement, and it's so relevant today because people get very attached to their health, to what they're eating, to how they look, like they're, and so that when they're not healthy, they're not okay. So they have a condition on their being. And that's sometimes they'll manifest illness just to help them realize the unconditional nature of consciousness. It transcends the body. It transcends the body. Now, I really believe in the balance of the heavens and the earth. And, you know, the spirit with the body, very, very, very much so in alchemy and Kriya Yoga and all that stuff. However, that is true, though, that when we get attached to something, even health, even love, romantic love, partnership love, community. And, you know, we're humans. We need community. All these ideas are half truths. And we become, when we become attached to them, we suffer when we don't have it, or when we have it, we're afraid to lose it. We're holding on, or, you know, we're not just being okay as we are. So that's, it's a big piece in why the Vis dialogue works, because it uses that principle.
And you can see how, with everything that you've said today, you can see how that in itself, combined probably, you know, with other things, naturopathic medicine, herbs, supplements, lifestyle, beliefs, can work together to lead the individual to being okay. I'm not even going to say to be healthy, to be attached to being healthy, but to be okay with what is and how they are.
That's it. That's right. Now, I am careful when I work with people. There's a principle in naturopathic medicine and in homeopathy. It's called minimum dose. So we want to get the minimum amount of something to affect a cure or the healing. So for me, the greatest minimum dose is giving nothing at all, except, you know, presence and being there with someone. And I'm well trained in homeopathy. I've been practicing for 25 years as well. And when a patient gets to a release point where there's a spontaneous healing, they're feeling better, they see clearly, they feel more peace, you know, I might even know the remedy that will help them, the homeopathic, but I won't give it, because there's a principle of, I call it the moth effect. You know, that moths are attracted to bright light, you know, like, so humans are attracted to stuff. Like, oh, that's going to help me. Oh, that's going to help me. And I've seen it happen so many times that I don't do this. I really don't like to make this mistake anymore, where they're in the seat of healing in the present moment because they've seen the truth. And then I say, okay, and here, you know, here's a remedy. And then they go, oh, there's the remedy. And I could just see they're, where they're seated in themselves, that place of power, and they've arrived at a good place. It goes out the window because they externalize to the remedy. And, you know, mind blown.
Yeah, I know. I'm just like, oh my gosh. Yeah. Wow. No, it's mind blowing because, yeah, I've seen that happen too, where individuals are in front of you and you see that potential of healing within them and you see it so clearly. And yeah, like you said, you give them that little thing and then they're like, oh, okay, I need to take that every day. I need to do this every day.
That's going to do it.
Yeah.
That's the answer.
But I guess sometimes, depending on the individual, they may need something in the meantime whilst they're figuring out that they have that inside and within to assist them to get there in their own time.
Yeah, I like the idea that supportive measures are fine.
Yeah.
But working with stuff that does a physiological action or does something for the symptoms of that chronic illness, I don't like to offer those because that works in the opposite direction. But nutritional support, detoxification, you know, maybe flower remedies to assist the very painful aspects of the emotion that the person's facing, to soften it, to move them forward, homeopathic remedy to move stuckness, sure, all that stuff. But I don't like, let's say somebody has a low thyroid, you know, I wouldn't want to give them something that boosts their thyroid function. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want that. Unless they absolutely have to perform for some reason. But there's a problem there with the ego and needing to accomplish things that's going to interfere with their healing. So they have to make a choice. They have to prioritize. So if somebody has adrenal exhaustion, I won't give adaptogenic herbs to support their adrenals because that is removing the symptoms at the most superficial level. And it removes the pressure cooker that comes from the symptoms that helps them see what's wrong, what's really wrong.
Yeah, that's definitely, yeah, I'm just, there's so much happening in my head at the moment. I'm mind blown. And I love that you shared that. And I can totally see your train of thought. I can see the beliefs. I can see how it works. And that's why I'm sitting with it. As you can see, I am evolving potentially right in front of you right now. And the listeners listening too, I think your voice, your beliefs, what you have to share definitely has an impact on individuals and allows them to question themselves. That potentially individuals that are listening right now are potentially asking themselves, how they can be okay with what is happening in their life, if it is an illness, if whatever it is that they're going through. And I think that's absolutely beautiful. And I loved everything that you shared in today's podcast with us. I appreciate you taking the time out. But before we let you go, is there one thing that you do, Moshe, every day, once a week, once a year, that really gets you to a state of being or, you know, being content in life?
Yeah, that's so good. Yes. So I do Kriya Yoga. I practice every day. I do pranayama in the morning, and then I do an advanced meditation in a devoted meditation time, you can really focus on this. But, you know, Sri Aurobindo from India, he was a great master. He wrote a book called Integral Yoga, which just basically means you could practice everything no matter what you're doing. You don't have to make it, oh, it's spiritual time and then it's like regular daytime. So I really like the practice of being the witness. You know what that means, being the witness?
Seeing yourself from an external point of view, or what are we seeing?
Well, yeah, it's sort of like realizing that what you're seeing, like everything that I can perceive about myself is an object of perception. Like the most obvious is the body. I could literally see that right there. Yeah. You know? So, and like if we look at the eye as an example, the eye sees things, but it itself doesn't, it doesn't see itself. And that's as true as well for the self, the true self, the I am consciousness. It perceives everything, but not itself, because it is the isness of that which perceives. So I like to be in a place where I'm reminding myself what I'm experiencing is an object of experience and not my true self. That puts the I am consciousness front and center, and I could just glide through life with joy and lightness of being. And when I get bogged down into like the things of my ego, then I forget that, and then I suffer, you know, like, so that's what I like to do every day. And, you know, I set the stage in the morning, that becomes the stage for the rest of the day. And then, so it's closer at hand and it's easier to access.
Yeah, I love that. That's amazing. I love that we're finishing a podcast on you explaining that. And I mean, I could talk to you for hours. I could ask you so many questions. I've had to hold myself back because I'm like, okay, time is running out. I had to hold myself back with, asking you so many questions and going in depth. But potentially we might get you back to talk about some other things in more detail. But I really appreciate you taking your time out and explaining the Viz dialogue and explaining the method and explaining health, explaining your journey. Journey, showing us your vulnerability of things that you've been through, and hopefully the audience is able to ask themselves a few things. And I'm gonna link on the show notes your website, the Viz Dialogue Method, your book, where people are able to contact you or individuals that you've worked with to get some healing if that's what they wish to do.
Thank you so much. I really thank you. You're really excellent host and so loving and present, and it's been a real pleasure to connect with you. So I'm game for round two at some point in the future. That could be really fun. We could delve into some of our favorite topics. That'd be fun.
Amazing, amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us on Natural Podcast. And remember, you are pure love, capable of living life to its fullest expression.
Information provided here is the opinion of Mahendra Guh and is for information purposes only and does not constitute medical advice. It is not intended to provide medical advice or take the place of medical advice or any current treatment you're undertaking. Consult your own medical professionals for any medical issues that you may be having. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the Natural Health Podcast. It is advised that you consult your doctor or healthcare professional in relation to any health concerns you may be having. Mahela Raghu does not take responsibility for any health consequences which occur from a person listening, viewing, or reading this content. Under the circumstances, shall the Natural Health Podcast, Mahela Raghu, any guests or contributors to the Natural Health Podcast, or any employees, associates, or affiliates of Mahela Raghu be responsible for damages arising from the information provided on the Natural Podcast. By listening to this podcast, you agree not to use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical conditions in either yourself or others. Please note, if you're taking prescription, do not stop your medication or start a new protocol, including but not limited to supplements, diet, lifestyle changes, without consulting a doctor or healthcare professional. If you or any person has a medical concern, you should consult with your healthcare provider or seek other professional medical advice. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something that you have read or heard on the Natural Podcast or in any linked materials. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or emergency services immediately. Neither Mahela Raghu nor the publisher of this context takes responsibility for the possible health consequences of any person or persons reading or listening or following the information in the educational content.